The monologue.
Well, despite being wrong about almost everything, Dr. Anthony Fauci is getting honored yet again, this time here in Washington State. He's been named the recipient of the 2022 Honorary Hutch Award, this coming, of course, from Fred Hutchinson Center. He will accept the award tomorrow night in an on-field ceremony before the Mariners game over at T-Mobile Park. And then he will throw out the ceremonial first pitch. We have seen his capability from the pitching mound in the past. Hasn't gone so well. Has not really lived up to the expectation of just being able to generally make it across the plate. You know, it doesn't have to be a strike, but sort of just in the general direction. The last time he pitched, I think it was at the Nationals game, it went into the dugout. It was so off. So we might get some good footage out of this to make fun of, I suppose. But understand that this is ridiculous for Fred Hutch to give him this award. They say in a statement, he's demonstrated fearless leadership and dedication to our country. We're honored to present him with this award of recognition of his decades of service to public health, unwavering belief in the power of science, which he always ignores, and tireless efforts throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. I don't understand this particular issue, especially because in this case, the Hutch Award typically honors baseball greats who contribute to the community outside of what they do on the diamond, on the field. So them going with Dr. Fauci is trying to make a statement here. They're trying to make a political statement, which I suppose I understand from Fred Hutch. That's what they do. That's what a lot of the healthcare organizations out here do. But could you not pick someone who was, I don't know, maybe a smidgen more correct than Dr. Fauci when it comes to COVID? We learned last week or 2 weeks ago now from Deborah Birx. She came out and acknowledged that they knew that the vaccine would not stop the spread of COVID. They lied. They lied to us. Dr. Fauci was chief among those liars. And not only did they lie, perhaps in their view for the greater good, because the vaccine does prevent you from getting significant infection or the likelihood of hospitalization. That's what the data seems to continue to suggest. And I believe that data, by the way. But they allowed people to lose their jobs, their livelihoods over this. They allowed individuals, some of whom are listening right now, to lose their jobs over what they all now acknowledge was a lie. And of course, this wasn't the only lie that Dr. Anthony Fauci told. He repeatedly told us that masks would stop the spread, though emails behind the scenes that you didn't get a chance to see at the time suggested that he didn't actually believe that. But how much did he get wrong? Not just the lies. How much did he get wrong? He told us not to go outdoors, despite knowing at the time that outdoor spread is nearly impossible. He kept kids from going into the classroom, despite knowing that kids were the least susceptible to negative outcomes with COVID. And we know, a courtesy of Trump-era officials, that he was arguing behind the scenes against what the president wished. Now, President Trump doesn't get a total pass here because he did listen to a lot of the things that Anthony Fauci said. But at the time, I don't blame him. I don't blame the president. And I'm willing to even give Dr. Fauci the benefit of the doubt up until a point. We were hit with a brand new virus. We didn't know exactly what it did, how it impacted people early on. We didn't. And that makes sense to me, that in a world in which this is a potentially deadly virus that was going to kill millions and millions and millions at a time where we didn't have treatment or a vaccine. Okay, I get it. I get it. You're going to make some mistakes. Most of us are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to people. But once you decide that you're going to ignore what the information actually is, what the data says, once you go out there and tell people that it can spread outdoors, but you won't tell BLM protesters not to gather, it became incredibly political. Dr. Fauci was part of the politicization. He did that. He lied along the way, he misled along the way, and he was just flat out wrong. So why exactly are we honoring him? Oh, because you like the political message it sends over at Fred Hutch. You love the idea that it gets you on record yet again talking about how you're anti-Trump and pro-Biden, which is essentially what is happening here when you take this kind of absurd position. The only thing that we can hope out of this is that he delivers another awful dumpster fire pitch. That I will then, if that happens again and we get it on video, I will then give Fred Hutch a pass and maybe even speculate a conspiracy. It was all a scam to get him here to try to throw another pitch.
The interview.
Democrats in Congress have brought a congressional hearing to right here in Seattle. It's all about pretending that the policies that have been installed by Democrat politicians haven't hurt business. But we also know that to be a total lie. Joining me on the line is a Republican who's here in Seattle, Brian Stile. He represents Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
What is the point of this congressional hearing? It's one on the road, which we generally don't see.
Yeah, no, Speaker Pelosi put together the Select Committee on Economic Disparity and Fairness and Growth, what I call the economy. And Pramila Jayapal is a member of this committee, and we are on the road here in Seattle, Washington, discussing labor policies. The left really wants to use this as a hearing to discuss how we can take the policies that were put in place in Washington and take them nationally. I'm out here to say, let's actually learn the lessons of what happened when the labor policies that were put in place in Seattle, what was the real impact? What was the real impact on business, on prices for consumers, and on workers? And I can tell you, after being in Seattle less than 24 hours, I have a lot of questions about what happened when the minimum wage went up as dramatically as it did. What happened when these taxes were placed on workers? And what happened in particular this summer when we see high school students looking for that first job, a summer job, learning the skills that you learn in your first job, like I did when I worked at an Applebee's in Janesville, Wisconsin? Were those opportunities present for high school students, or was the minimum wage so high that a lot of high school students found out that they couldn't get that first job and a first step into the labor market?
And you know, on the left, they're going to pretend that none of these issues actually happened, that all was well. You can't really find out unless you talk to the right people, many of whom are business owners who no longer have a business as a result of the policies. So from the Republican perspective, how do you go about getting answers that Democrats don't want presented?
Well, at this hearing, we're going to have a series of witnesses, and I've invited Todd Myers, who's the environmental director from the Washington Policy Center. He really brings a great background of understanding what played out in your state of Washington, what's playing out on the ground for real here in Seattle. And Todd Myers is going to be our witness, and we're going to be asking him questions on the record from not only from me, but also hopefully he'll get some tough questions from the Democrats, because he's armed with the data, with the numbers, that hours actually fall, that job opportunities are eliminated when you put in place these very aggressive, progressive policies from the far left. And here's my concern. It's one thing to allow that to play out in Seattle. Seattle voters have to determine who represents them. But what happens if we took these policies and we rolled them out nationally? That's my concern. That's the policies of Build Back Better. That's the policies of the far left. And so this is going to be kind of an all-out policy debate tomorrow, rightfully so, because we have to understand what happened when the policies of the far left were implemented in Seattle, and what's the risk if we take those, not only statewide, maybe in the state of Seattle, but what happens if we take those nationally through a Build Back Better approach through the Biden administration, through Speaker Pelosi?
And that's a real damage here, pretending that a business in Seattle, which is now paying $17.27 an hour, why should that business be treated the same as a business in Janesville, Wisconsin? If all of a sudden, that would just be catastrophic.
Absolutely. And so there is a reason why we need to allow, you know, states and municipalities to make the decisions that are best for them. But what lessons can we learn when we see experiments being played out across the country? I like to say, as we look at our laboratories across the United States in municipalities and in states, they're experiments, but not all experiments are successful. And so where we see experiments that have failed, those are sometimes the best lessons to learn. And so I'm coming at this from a perspective of let's get the data. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow with the Washington Policy Center, I think we're going to actually be able to look, dive in at the data and see that job opportunities were removed when small businesses closed due to government mandates on labor, that high school students found themselves unable to get that first job, that first foray into the labor market. And we're going to have this conversation at City Hall tomorrow, and we'll see the progressive left put forward their best arguments. But I think ultimately, at the end of the day, what we're going to see is conservative free market policies really rule the day. That is the path that we want to take out, that we want to take nationally.
I certainly hope that you're successful. It's going to take opposition to the Democrats to actually point to all the problems. And by the way, these are problems caused just by economic policy. And this is not even dipping the toes into the waters of what happens when you defund the police and you allow crime and homelessness to run rampant, because that puts a lot of strain on these businesses that are already suffering from the financial side of things. We've been talking with Congressman Brian Steil. He's a Republican from Wisconsin who's in town for the hearing tomorrow. Congressman, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Now this.
The monologue.
A new family moved into a South Beacon Hill home in Seattle. They just moved there in the spring. And they tell King 5 they love it there.
This is our family home, right? This has been passed around through our whole family. We personally like this neighborhood. It's super quiet. You got the community garden there. I work up in Beacon Hill, so everything is so close.
Except when he says everything is so close, he also means a homeless encampment. There's an encampment next door to his home.
The housing itself is comfortable, with the exception of this problem right here.
And it's a huge problem because they leave out a whole bunch of garbage. It causes a whole bunch of problems.
There's chairs, there's rotting wood, all of this other stuff that's just been piling up.
And all of that stuff that piles up, it has a tendency to attract a certain kind of vermin, like a rat. And they've had to call an exterminator for the rat infestation.
You see right there where our exterminator put our rat box, because that's where the main infestation is coming from their front door.
Yes. Unfortunately, that's what they have to deal with in this home that they love, a home that has been passed down from generation to generation. They're wondering why it's not being dealt with, because not only is this encampment there with the garbage, you've got a whole bunch of RVs there. You've got other vehicles that are parked on the side of his property line in the city right of way. And they're not getting any reaction when they reach out to the city for help.
I've opened up multiple cases with every avenue of Find It, Fix It app, Department of Health, Sanitation, and nothing happens.
Now, part of the reason why nothing happens is this is a district that is represented by Socialist Seattle City Councilmember Tammy Morales. She gave a statement to King 5 News that said, "We hear this family's concerns and my office is happy to assist. This is an issue many constituents have emailed us about." The problem that she doesn't include in her statement, the problem is that she is opposed to sweeps. So they can reach out to her all they want. The fact of the matter is, nothing's going to get done if you are hoping for a Socialist Seattle Councilwoman by the name of Tammy Morales to actually get it done. Because you've got another person who lives there. He's spent 3 years trying to get a resolution here.
He had the dangerous cable running over the road, so the car ran over, and then you see the messy cable are. It looked really dangerous.
Yeah, it is really dangerous. It is really dangerous. But the city doesn't care. The city doesn't care. And when you've worked really, really hard, when you've tried to get the attention of the people who can fix this, and they just ignore you, you end up feeling discouraged.
It's frustrating, you know? It's like, what else can you really do? Everyone has a right to live somewhere, but it's like not up against someone's house. And it sucks because it's like, this is private property, but once you get out there over that fence, it's nothing else.
This city is not going to take this seriously until you come up with a policy that puts teeth to it. You need a policy with teeth. You need a policy that says, if you do not take us up on our offers of resources, going into shelter, going into treatment that we're offering, that we are paying, unless you do that, we're going to throw you in jail or we're just going to push you out of the city. Unless you have a policy that adopts that approach, this is only going to get worse. It is only going to get worse. I like to say that it'll be a standstill, like it can't get any worse than now, but we know that it can. If the powers that be, like a Tammy Morales, stop all sweeps whatsoever, then it is going to continue to get worse. This is an easy fix. It's costly, but no more costly than what we're doing now. And instead of helping people out, not only do you keep homeless out on the streets to eventually die, but you are also hurting people like this family who just want to be safe, who want to live in a neighborhood that they can enjoy. But I guess in Seattle, that's asking for a little bit too much.
The interview.
There's a new book out. It's called The Woking Dead by A.J. Rice. He's a friend of mine. He's a publicist. He is a former radio producer, and now he's an author. A.J., welcome back to the show.
Brother Jason, good to be here.
So The Woking Dead takes us through, in very easily digestible snippets, basically, or vignettes, just how woke culture has decimated this country, or at least is trying to.
Absolutely. Mostly led by cancel culture, but I mean, wokeism comes in many forms. I call it a Vogue virus because it's the true virus that's actually disrupting the culture. I mean, the China virus hit us medically, but this virus has been sort of disarming us with sort of soft authoritarianism for really going back to even pre-Trump.
What did Trump do to this movement?
Look, I think one of the reasons that he resonated is that he was a counterpuncher against some of this stuff. I mean, look, trade and immigration were huge for him, but his rejection of playing the political correct games, people loved him for that. Now, some people obviously were turned off by a little bit of it. There were some people maybe in the suburbs of some cities that didn't like Queens and they didn't like the counterpunching and the tweeting. But for the most part, he broke a lot of people that were trying to order our universe over wokeism, cancel culture, CRT, you know, white privilege, microaggressions. I mean, it comes in many forms. There's a lot of spots on this leopard, but he, you know, shouted stop at least for 4 years.
He did. And, you know, part of the points you make in this book has to do with how it's showing up in our culture. You take us through how it's showing up in sports, how it's showing up in the entertainment space. One of your chapters or sections called Opening Night for the Joke Police. It's curious to see how Dave Chappelle has become this fighter for the right, even though that's not really his intention.
No, I mean, Dave Chappelle is not exactly Clarence Thomas or Ben Carson. But he's, you know, like a lot of comedians, I mean, you know, comedians going all the way back to Lenny Bruce, these guys were not part of any one party. They were free speech advocates that, you know, that the authorities tried to cancel. Sometimes it was the Republicans that went after comedians. Sometimes it was the Democrats. But as far as what's going on with comedy nowadays, some comedians have completely drank the Kool-Aid and they're genuflecting to the woke battalion. But, you know, Chappelle, who got tossed out of, a club 2 weeks ago in Minnesota, I mean, he's just bringing up, you know, some salient points about how quickly the LGBTQ community got rights versus, say, black people. I mean, you know, and he's making jokes and he's having some fun. But we have in the last couple of years gone through what I call the Nuremberg trials of comedy, where, you know, some shows have been canceled. Some people get replaced, like Tim Allen got replaced in this Buzz Lightyear movie because he might have some traditional points of view. So, I mean, it's all around us. And I think the comedians really are the cultural point of the spear fighting back against it, at least some of them.
Well, and on the Hollywood side, you've got a really good piece in there just about this, what you call faux concern over white privilege. I mean, these are Hollywood actors who are talking about white privilege and they experience nothing but privilege.
Oh, absolutely. And I talk about the monochromatic faces of late night. I mean, other than Trevor Noah, I mean, there's just a bunch of white guys, a bunch of Gen X white guys, you know, for the most part. And before them, it was a bunch of boomer white guys with Letterman and Leno. So, I mean, it is the least diverse group of people in the country that hold, you know, positions of power that are supposed to be the distributors of all things funny.
Where do you see this woke movement going?
Well, I would say that they're not going to stop. So you have to vote with your wallet. You have to vote with your feet. if you don't like what Disney's up to in China, if you don't like what Disney's up to in Florida, if you don't like what the NBA is painting on the court or what the NFL is spending ticket money on, you know, diversity courses and, you know, CRT courses for their players using, you know, Jay-Z and some other rappers, I think, as ambassadors, I guess, for diversity in the NFL. I mean, look, you can turn the channel. I mean, you have to fight back. You know, you have to listen to shows like yours. And, you know, I mean, you cover some of this stuff yourself when you do your TV hits. So you have to fight with your wallet and take your money elsewhere. I mean, that's not what this country's supposed to be, right? Conservatives are not supposed to have to go create their own movies and their own schools and their own churches and their own television networks. But we've gotten to that point. You know, I mean, Andrew Breitbart, Laura Ingraham, some of my mentors always said the American people are downstream from culture. They're not downstream from politics. So, I mean, unfortunately, we gotta kind of do that. We have to create our own entertainment.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate reality. I hope it doesn't last. I would prefer that everyone sort of gives equal treatment to both sides or multiple sides of any issue. But unfortunately, right now, it seems like that's what we got to do. Speaking of where to put money, make sure you're putting your money into purchasing The Woking Dead, How Society's Vogue Virus Destroys Our Culture. It's by A.J. Rice, put out by Post Hill Press. Again, The Woking Dead. Purchase this book today. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, brother.
Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke this story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form. Presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
In a 51-50 vote, tiebreaker to Kamala Harris, the vice president, Democrats passed the Inflation Reduction Act. It's supposed to reduce inflation, which it doesn't. It's supposed to protect the environment, most likely won't. And it's supposed to make healthcare costs considerably more affordable. Yeah, good luck with that. Obviously, Democrats think it's wise to go into the midterm elections with a whole bunch of tax increases. On Friday, it gets to the House. It is expected to pass thanks to the support of Democrats like Kim Schreier, who's a doctor, in case you didn't realize it. She currently represents Washington's 8th Congressional District. We would like to see that change as she heads into the general to face off against Matt Larkin, who made it past his Republican opponents. And he joins me now. Matt, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Jason. Glad to be back.
So before we dive into the Inflation Reduction Act, you made it to the general. A surprise to some. Was it a surprise to you?
No, it was not a surprise to us. We hustled our butts off and we worked hard and, you know, we saw this coming a mile away. We did all the right things and we connected with the voters. So, no, we were reinforced what we already believed on election night. So we're excited. We're moving forward. We got a team put together now, and now we can kind of take the fight fully to Kim Schreier, which we're really happy about.
Good for your campaign, awful for the country that the Inflation Reduction Act is destined for a certain passage in the House. Kim Schreier will support it, as far as we know. I say good for the campaign because Democrats are actively saying, going into the midterms, we want 87,000 more IRS agents out there going after folks who are living right now in Bonnie Lake or in Auburn.
Yeah, that's exactly what people want to hear right now. Or don't worry, everyone, we're going to double the size of the IRS. That is not the message that Americans want. And frankly, it's not what we need. This is just another example of why we have the inflation that we have. And you're right. We're confident Kim Schreier will vote for it because she's never deviated from the Biden-Pelosi agenda. This is just another example of that. People need real fixes right now, Jason. And all this is going to do is add to our inflation.
Let's talk about some of the issues that this bill is supposed to address. We'll start with climate policy. You and I haven't really taken a dive too deeply into your positions on energy policy and the environment. So just first, big picture, what is your response to the Biden energy policy, as it were? What would you do differently?
Well, I think it's misguided from the beginning. He's going overseas to get the same energy from countries that we have fundamental disagreements with when we have the same forms of energy here. So it just seems so misguided, and it's kind of a bait and switch, if you will, because he's saying, look, we're feeling really good about ourselves for not digging for fossil fuels here in this country. So everyone, good job here. China here, Iran here. Venezuela, let's give us some of your oil. And it just, people see right through that. And what it does is it brings the same carbon footprint issues that he's trying to fix. And all it does is embolden and finance our enemies, but also it keeps good, well-paying jobs out of Americans who need them right now. So it's misguided, and we need to do something about it. We need to be honest with the American people.
At the same time, obviously, Washington's 8th Congressional District has a lot of green space. What can or should be done to help the environment at least maintain what we currently have to the point of just being good stewards of
the
environment?
Sure, we all want to be good stewards. I've got four little kids, and we want to hand down a better environment than when we found it, always. That should always be our goal. And we do. We care about the environment, especially in the 8th. There's a lot of beautiful areas. You go over the mountains or even on the west side of the mountains. I'm a big hunter, fisherman, hiker. I love being out on the Puget Sound and in the water and exploring this beautiful place that we were blessed with. And we want to keep it that way. But we need to be certainly not abandoning all of the traditional ways of getting energy. Washington, by the way, is a extremely clean energy state. And people don't realize that. And we need to be doubling down on some of those some of those renewable energy sources, but we need to be doing it in a responsible way and not just abandoning oil altogether.
To pay for a lot of what will be spent in this bill, the Democrats are relying not just on residents who owe maybe a little bit of money to the IRS in your district, but also a 15% minimum tax on these large corporations, a 1% tax on stock buybacks. Where do you stand on both of those taxes?
I'm knee-jerk, repulsively against raising taxes all the time, Jason. This bill is nothing but a tax hike to everyday Americans, pretty much every American, including businesses like mine. I'm a business owner. We own a company right here in Washington State, and this is going to be a huge tax hike for us. It's going to be a huge tax hike for me as a citizen. It's going to be a huge tax hike for Americans making over $30,000. This is the exact wrong policy to have as we slide into a recession. We need to be cutting taxes, freeing up enterprises, and doing a better job of putting money back into Americans' pockets.
Matt Larkin joining me on the line. He is the candidate facing Kim Schreier, the incumbent Democrat, who's a doctor, if you didn't know, in Washington's 8th Congressional District. Another issue that is supposedly going to be tackled in the Inflation Reduction Act, even though it weirdly didn't make it into the title of the disingenuously named bill, is health care. Specifically, you know, something that didn't go quite as far as Democrats had hoped to go, basically allowing the Health and Human Services Secretary to negotiate prices on a certain number of drugs via Medicare. The goal is obviously to get drug costs down. There's nothing wrong with that, is there?
There's nothing wrong with getting drug costs down, but they're doing it at the expense of the free market and innovation, and that's the problem here. Anytime the federal government starts dabbling in subsidies and in innovation and in taxing and regulation, it stifles innovation, and this is a time when we need innovation from drug companies more than ever. As we're wrestling with pandemics and all sorts of things like that, we need drug companies to be incentivized to keep doing what they're doing and find cutting-edge ways to fix a lot of the health problems that we're dealing with. And this bill just stifles that. Democrats' policy is reflexively to tax, burden, and regulate constantly. And what they're finding out is that's not a good policy ever. Especially as you're seeing the choking inflation that we're burdened with right now.
How do you get inflation under control? Obviously, the Democrats and the Biden administration pretending that we're not in a recession. They've redefined the term recession like they redefine other words. We clearly are. Inflation is clearly causing a whole bunch of problems. We're spending a whole bunch of money, which is going to make it worse. So how do you get it under control?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you how we don't. We don't raise taxes on everybody. We don't double the size of the IRS. What we do is we tighten our belts the same way that you probably have a budget, Jason. I have a budget with my wife. We sit down at the table and we budget our money. We live within our means. And it takes both parties willing to do that. And frankly, our party can be just as guilty as the Democrats. Mm-hmm. Usually they're a lot worse, mind you, but our party can be guilty of that too. And it takes steel-spined fiscal conservatives to go back there and actually dig in and say, look, we need to live within our means, and the federal government needs to do that. For so many reasons, that will be beneficial to the inflation problem. I don't want to hand down debt to my kids on a personal Larkin family level and then from the federal government level. So why can't these career politicians in D.C. do that? It's because they're never forced to. And I'm hoping to go back to D.C. when I win this seat in November and force them to live within their means.
Keith Swank is running in Washington's 10th congressional district. He's a Republican going up against incumbent Marilyn Strickland. Much different race than yours, but obviously going up against any incumbent puts you on the defense a little bit. He was disappointed with the number of Republicans who turned out to vote. When you look at Washington's 8th and the numbers that came in, were you happy with turnout?
No, I don't think I'll ever be happy with the turnout, Jason. We need voters to come out. And frankly, we need Republicans to come out. Voter turnout was lower than last time, which was disappointing. But we're hoping and we're optimistic that in November we'll see those voters who sat it out for the primary to come out for the general.
Why do you think frankly, they sat it out?
You know, I think it's always tough to have a primary in the middle of the summer. I just do. People are distracted. They're in Lake Chelan with their families. They're out of town. They're camping. They're hiking. And it's just not a priority. As much as it is to you and I and to a lot of people who are politically active, the mass population just has other things on their mind in early August. But come November, I think they'll be fired up and ready to go. And we're going to make sure that they are aware of the election in November. And we are going to do the best job possible to get them out voting.
Well, and Democrats had, I think it's fair to say, a better showing than anticipated. There was this feeling that going into the primary, even that the wave would be so overwhelming that they might just sit this one out. It would appear that Roe v. Wade has pushed at least some of them into the camp of voting maybe when they otherwise wouldn't, despite the fact that Roe v. Wade decision to overturn doesn't impact Washington state at all. You've already seen Sure. some of the attack ads against you and some of the attacks put in lame press releases about how you are a fringe Republican because of your support of life. How do you plan to overcome that in a district that, you know, it's not a red district, it's purple. Arguably, Sure. it's starting to lean blue because of some changes maybe in Chelan and in parts of East King Sure. County. So how do you overcome that?
Jason, we've been out doorbelling thousands of doors. I've talked to so many voters in every corner of this district, and what I'm not hearing about is abortion being a top issue for them. So what we need to do is connect on issues that they do care about, like inflation, like public safety, like taxes. These are things that they care about. We're happy to have the abortion discussion, but it's not going to be the centerpiece of our campaign. And frankly, it shouldn't be. People are not concerned about it because nothing's changing here in Washington state, as you pointed out. So my position is not a radical position. I'm just pro-life. It's pretty simple. So we can touch on that. But at the end of the day, I'm talking about issues that they care about. And frankly, those issue sets haven't changed much since my attorney general race. And I won this district in my attorney general race with over 51% of the vote. So these are crossover issues that I'm looking to connect with. Crime, inflation, homelessness, drug abuse. These are all things that even Democrats I talk to care about. Even Democrats are saying, you know, Matt, finally someone's willing to talk about these things and try to fix them. So good for you. We're willing to cross party lines and vote for you because you're talking about things that we mm-hmm. care about. Yeah. So that's how we're going to get past it. And we're just going to keep hammering that message.
And you're going into the general with the support of your previous opponents, both Reagan Dunn as well as Jesse Jensen have loaned their support to Matt Larkin. You're going to need every single vote that we can. It's going to be tight. So Republicans, independents, and Democrats who are just sick and tired of the direction of this country, please make sure you vote. And please make sure you visit Matt's website, larkin4congress.com. It's the number four. larkin4congress.com. See how you can help out on this campaign to make sure that Washington plays a role in the what we hope to be red wave in November. Matt Larkin, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate being here.
Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rants. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rants is in focus now.
Jason Rants, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
We have a more local update to the story we brought you last week, I think on Thursday, where as we're seeing a whole bunch of kids getting ready to return to the classroom, we're seeing the writing on the wall that we're going to have a teacher shortage. We previously brought it to you from the nationwide perspective, where the American Federation of Teachers thinks that about 40% of its members, based on this survey that they took, might end up leaving their job in the next 3 years. Three quarters say they wouldn't recommend their profession to others. And now we're getting a better sense of what the local teachers believe, why they're so concerned with staying in this job and why they might likely go somewhere else.
We need to actually make the conditions better so that the teachers we have right now will stay. We really need them. And that new people want to come into teaching.
That courtesy of Cairo 7 TV, teachers say low pay, pandemic stress, and politics are driving them away. And now we see what this is really about. This is, and I have no doubt that the industry itself of teaching is struggling with staffing just like every other industry, but I'm willing to bet this is being wholeheartedly exploited by the teachers' unions to get higher pay. And, you know, in addressing the quote-unquote pandemic stress, this is just about changing the hours so teachers don't have to go into the office as long as they do currently. That's all this is about. They can say politics are driving them away all they want. That sounds like a veiled threat against the conservatives. Hey, you better stop it or we're going to come after you again. I am so sick and tired of this. Your job is to teach. It's supposed to be in a classroom. It's supposed to be in front of students. You get what you get. You already have really good pay here in Washington State. You can pretend otherwise, but you have great pay to the point where it's stealing from other professions like radio producers, for example. We'll just throw that out there, to become teachers. Stop complaining constantly about your jobs. Stop it. You're supposed to be doing this because you care about the kids. And with that,
the last rant.
Let's remember why you get into a job that you get into, regardless of whether or not it's a teacher or a talk show host. All of us have decided to get into our profession for a reason. Stop forgetting that. It's not always about the money. I'm not going to pretend that money doesn't matter. It clearly does. We all have our worth, our value in our own head. Sometimes it matches reality, other times it doesn't. But it's not like we're working for free. Pushing that aside for the moment, remember why you got into a profession. It can't always just be about the money or the perks. It has to be something more than that. Because otherwise, all you're going to do is chase a larger paycheck. You have to be passionate about what you do. And if you've got a bunch of teachers who just lost the passion, so be it. They need to be replaced with people who've got passion to help kids, to guide kids. And if that's not good enough for you, based on the current salary expectations, based on what's set at a budget level, then maybe teaching isn't for you.